Let's go back to the past and history, which is the reason you've written your book, and in fact, several books. What got you into the subject initially?
It was genealogy. I think your guest previously was talking about genealogy. My great-great-great-grandmother, her name was Anne Hatch, and I was interested in her, investigating her history, and I found that she had five illegitimate children before my great-great-grandfather came along. And the second one was baptised by the local rector of Sutton in Surrey, and his name was Henry Hatch. And I wondered if they were related.
Right.
Because I thought it'd be fantastic, you know, really delicious. So I started off on this investigation. There was no link, certainly not one that I've ever found. But I eventually, I came across a record in an old copy of the Times of the trial of his nephew, and this was Henry John Hatch. And it turned into, investigation of him turned into my first book. He was the first chaplain of Wandsworth Prison. And he ended up in prison himself after he was convicted of indecent assault against a couple of children that were under his care. His defence was very badly handled. And 6 months later, his friends got up a fund, and the principal accuser, who was a 12-year-old female child, Mary Eugenia Plummer, she was tried at the Old Bailey for willful and corrupt perjury.
Right.
She was found guilty, she was sent to prison, and Henry was let out on the royal pardon after a few days, because the Queen was very busy, you know. She had to, it was her birthday the following week, and she had to do this, that and the other. Then Henry embarked on a long series of court cases to try and get compensation.
Yeah.
And he ended up a rector in Essex, in fact, Little Stanbridge, which is near Southend.
That's fascinating.
Well, I did all this research because, you know, you get sucked in, and then one thing leads to another and another and another. And then I thought, I need to write it up. Excuse me. And the book was the result.
So was there a point where you're getting all this information together and it's still coming in, and you thought to yourself, this is a great story.
Yeah.
I want to share it.
Yes.
How long did that process take?
Well, it was a process of 2 or 3 years. I mean, I was still working at that point, so I was sort of, you know, doing a little bit of sneaky typing during lunchtimes. But it wasn't, I mean, I wanted to share it, but I really wanted to just sort of register it. You know, I've done the research. It needs to be recorded, because it would have been absurd to have just not done anything with it, because it's a fascinating story. And there was nothing, absolutely nothing in the literature about this bloke. Not a single thing, not a dicky bird. Subsequently, I think there was a sentence in a book I came across, and then there was another book came out a few months or a year later, a sort of a social history society thing about it. But anyway, so I recorded it, and it's now recorded posterity. And if you want to read it, well, it's in the library, and you can even buy a copy if you want.
Henry's Trials. So a personal interest became your first book. That's written. That's out there.
Yep.
You presumably got the bug for writing, but yep, also for sort of true historical crime. Is that?
Indeed. It was the research and the writing it up that was really interesting. And that, you know, it really, I found it completely absorbing. And it turned into a sort of an obsession, I'll admit it. And it led into the second one, the story of Thomas Smethurst. He was a retired doctor of medicine, and his case was constantly compared with Henry's case in the press. But because both cases could have been sorted out much more easily if there had been a court of criminal appeal, which there wasn't at the time. He was accused of murdering his bigamous wife by poison in Richmond, and he unfortunately fell foul of a very biased judge and an incompetent chemist. The result was he was found guilty of murder. He's sentenced to death. It was a complete outcry in the press, because the judge was totally biased. The evidence that he committed the murder was effectively non-existent. It was all circumstantial. and he was pardoned. He was reprieved a few days before the execution. He was then pardoned, but he was immediately rearrested and tried for the bigamy, and he did serve. Right. He served a year in Wandsworth for the bigamy.
That's interesting, because Henry was sentenced, and that sentence was then quashed. And this gentleman, again, it was, although he got done for the bigamy in the end, but that sentence again was quashed. So it's kind of, I don't know if miscarriage of justice, but it's justice not quite getting it right, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Well, this was what made both cases interesting. It was justice not getting it, and it wasn't really justice.
Hmm.
Henry, I mean, after all that, Henry, the total compensation he got was 40 shillings for 6 months in jail, and, you know, several years out of his life, and his reputation sort of ruined, although it was reinstated. Smethurst, he was probably just a bit silly.
Hmm.
And as I say, he fell foul of this incompetent chemist who thought he'd discovered arsenic in one of his medicines, and in fact he didn't. There was no arsenic at all. It turned out it was a byproduct of the process that the chemist was using to detect it. So it was, I mean, he was clearly a bigamist.
Hmm.
And he served his time, but he certainly wasn't guilty of murder, in my view.
It's interesting, in contemporary cases you get people who are sentenced to long terms in prison purely based on forensic evidence, and occasionally yes. the machinery is wrong or the scientist is yes. wrong. You don't tend to think of it as being something that goes back a ways, but this right. this chemist was essentially doing a similar thing, wasn't he? Analysing a chemical.
It was exactly. Well, this case was 1860. Yeah,
yeah,
no, 1859, sorry, Smethurst. And it was one of the first cases that turned on expert witnesses. There were 13 doctors and scientists who said he was guilty.
Mm.
And there were 7 doctors who said, no, he wasn't guilty. She clearly died of natural causes. And so, you know, there was it was really up to the judge and the jury to decide. And the judge was dreadfully biased. And interestingly, the same judge who was biased there was also biased with Henry Hatch and refused to get him compensation. So, I mean, he was a rotter of the first order.
I can see a pattern developing. Would you say that it is a pattern this way, those kind of cases particularly fascinate you, because it's kind of normal people kind of cast adrift in the legal system?
Yeah.
Kind of the playthings of an incompetent judge or a not very good chemist or...
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And I mean, Henry was let down by everyone in the legal profession, from the Home Secretary down. You know, his solicitor, his barrister. No, his barrister, his first barrister was okay. Sergeant Ballantyne, his name was. He was also involved in the Smethurst case. But everybody else let him down. And in the case of Smethurst, clearly the judge was so biased. It was outrageous. And I mean, the letters to the newspapers made it quite clear.
Mm.
And the Home Secretary spent 4 days going over all the material. And he called in the Queen's obstetrician in the end to say, look, you know, was this woman poisoned? Could she have been poisoned? Or was it natural causes? And he said that he determined that there was insufficient proof. So it was clear he had to have a pardon.
So that's all contained within Smethurst's Luck, which,
yes.
is, which is book number two. Your next book, is that ready to go? We've got Murder in the Red Barn is what's out currently. What does the future hold?
Well, that's a very good question. It's hard work doing these.
How long does it take on average to get all the info together?
Sort of about 2 to 3 years. The Red Barn has taken less than that, because there were far fewer primary sources to look at. With the first two, I had to go to various record offices, spent a lot of time, you know, poring over documents and things. 2 to 3 years it takes. The thing is, all of these three cases, they were special to me. I mean, the first one found me, and the second one was a consequence of the first one. And then the Red Barn, as I said, that goes right back. So, I mean, if there's something out there that grabs me, I'll certainly get involved in it. But I'm actually thinking I'm wondering about science a bit, you know, and the you know, life, the universe, and everything, that sort of thing. I'm not sure whether I'm up to that or even qualified, but it's an interesting subject.
And often, if that starts bubbling, you know that something at some point will come. It's been an absolute joy talking to you, Peter. It's been really interesting. How can people find out what you're up to, or get hold of your books?
Am I allowed to give out my website?
You certainly are.
It's www.merelybooks.com. That's MIRLI books, all one word, .com. It just tells you about me, tells you about what I do. There's a blog, and all the contact details are on there.
Absolutely fantastic.
And if you go to your local bookshop and demand that they get the books in, they will do so.
Indeed. Again, absolute pleasure. Best of luck with Life, the Universe, and everything, or the next historical mystery that you
whatever
delve into.
Whatever it might be,
We shall watch this space. Peter Maggs, thank you very much.
Thank you.